Mesdames et messieurs, collègues, distingués invités, soyez les bienvenus. Je m'appelle Mark Weinstein, je suis le vice-principal développement et relations avec les diplômés ici à McGill. I'm delighted to see so many of our chancellor level and dean circle donors, major gift donors, and volunteers here this evening. It is because of your generosity and hard work on behalf of McGill that we have so much to celebrate. Bienvenue à l'étape montréalaise de notre tournée Passport pour l'avenir. Aux étapes précédentes de Londres, Los Angeles, Toronto et New York, nous avons pu engager des conversations animées, captivantes et porteuses de réflexions sur la forme que pourrait prendre l'Université de l'avenir et sur les mesures que doit prendre McGill pour demeurer dynamique et concurrentielle. And though I expect our panel to be somewhat more collegial than Obama-Romney, I had to say that, or Gary Bettman and the NHL Players Association, tonight should provide us all with a stimulating and thought-provoking discussion as we explore what the future holds in the areas of science, technology, and innovation. We will also be sharing with you tonight a special and very significant gift announcement related to Campaign McGill, so please stay tuned. We are very fortunate to have with us four incredible individuals who've agreed to lend their broad experience and perspectives to a discussion of the challenges and opportunities facing McGill, and in fact, all of Canada, as we strive to become global leaders in science and innovation. Throughout the discussion, you will have several opportunities to weigh in on some of these critical issues, which is why each of you was provided with a clicker on your seat when you arrived. At certain points in the conversation this evening, you will be asked to vote on specific questions which will appear on the screen. All you need to do is click the button associated with the answer you want to choose. Now, if you want to change your answer, you can just press another choice and it will override your previous selection. At the end of the session, I'd ask you to remember to leave your clicker on the seat or hand it to a member of our staff as you exit. Immediately following the panel, we will open the floor to questions from the audience. You were all handed cards when you first arrived, and if you would like to submit a question in English or French, please write it down and flag it down a roving member of our team. They will collect your question and submit it to our moderator. Now, on with the show. When we were considering who should moderate tonight's discussion, one name came immediately to mind, André Picard. As many of you may already know, André is the public health reporter at the Globe and Mail and one of Canada's top public policy writers. He is the author of the best-selling books Critical Care, Canadian Nurses Speak for Change, and The Gift of Death, Confronting Canada's Tainted Blood Tragedy. André has received much acclaim for his writing, including the Michener Award for Meritorious Public Service Journalism, the Canadian Policy Research Award, and the Atkinson Fellowship for Public Policy Research. En 2002, il a reçu le prix centenaire de l'Organisation panaméricaine de la santé, remis au meilleur journaliste en santé publique des Amériques. En 2005, l'Association canadienne de santé publique l'a nommé le premier héros national de la santé publique, et en 2007, il a été nommé champion de la santé mentale. André a aussi été quatre fois finaliste au concours canadien de journalisme, le prix Pulitzer du Canada. His advocacy work has been honored by a number of consumer health groups, including Safe Kids Canada, the Canadian Mental Health Association, the Canadian Alliance on Mental Illness, and the Canadian Hearing Society. André will be joined by Professor Joe Schwartz, Director of McGill's Strache Office for Science and Society, John Pritz, a fourth-year student in the Faculty of Agriculture and Environmental Sciences, and Taryn Tomlinson, a McGill Engineering graduate and robotic systems engineer at the Canadian Space Agency. Please welcome our moderator and panelists.
Well, thank you, Mark, et bienvenue à cette magnifique soirée chez McGill. Tonight, we're going to explore future of science and innovation in Canada in the 21st century, and specifically McGill's role in helping shape Canada's policies and how it can become a global leader. So I'm going to go quickly over the format, and then I'll introduce our panelists a little more formally, and then we'll get right to it. So we have 30 minutes tonight, and we're going to tackle three broad themes. First, we're going to look at the fundamental role of universities in contributing to scientific innovation and explore some of the ways that universities like McGill can overcome what's come to be called the innovation deficit in our universities. Next, we're going to examine the ways Canadian society can nurture the talent pipeline, attract the best talent to universities, McGill in particular, and create a foundation for innovation. Third, and finally, our final question will be a discussion about the future of higher education in Quebec, complete with a conversation. This conversation, of course, wouldn't be complete with talk about money and tuition fees, so we're going to tackle that politically sensitive area here in Quebec. And then, of course, we're going to leave time for a question period, so you can write your questions down on the card. And in each one of the three questions, I'm going to poll you. You have those little buttons, and we'll have poll results up on the screen, and we'll see if our panelists agree or disagree with the audience. And so let me move to introducing a little more formally our three panelists. None of my introductions are going to do them justice because I cut them down quite short. I think Mark got an introduction from my mom, so it was very lengthy and exaggerated, but I won't give that benefit to our other guests because we want to save the time for questions. So on my left, on your right, Dr. Joe Schwartz probably requires no introduction in Montreal. He's the director of the McGill University's Office for Science and Society, and you see him frequently on TV and hear him on the radio on CGAD, where he is host of the Dr. Joe Show. Dr. Schwartz is well known for his entertaining public lectures on all kinds of topics, everything from the science of aging to the chemistry of love. You're not going to have the benefit of those tonight, unfortunately. He's won numerous awards that I won't list, but I'll just single one out, as he's the only non-American to win the American Chemical Society's prestigious Grady Stack Award. Dr. Joe has also written four best-selling books. He's a fabulous cook, and he's a great fan of Sherlock Holmes, so he'll unravel some mysteries for us tonight. In the middle, we have John Pritz. He's a student at McGill, originally from Ithaca, New York. He's now a fourth-year undergraduate studying in the Faculty of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences. I was teasing him that the only thing Canadians know about Ithaca is that it has an awful prison. But luckily, he escaped. The city, not the prison. Barely. Now, John, in 2010, along with his colleague Christian Elliott, combined their passion for sustainable development and global health and their creative film expertise and established their own nonprofit, a media company called Developing Pictures. And it's dedicated to helping out small NGOs and community-based organizations. So he's also already shown his entrepreneurial spirit in addition to being a great student and, as you'll see, a wonderful public speaker. And on my far left, your far right, Taryn Tomlinson is a robotic systems engineer at the Canadian Space Agency, and she's dedicated her career to developing systems and technology for the pursuit of space knowledge and exploration. She's a native of BC, a graduate of the Electrical Engineering Department here at McGill, so an alumnus, and she also has a master's degree in astronomy from the University of California, San Diego. Taryn's current work involves robotics, and she's part of the coordinated effort of the international space community to get more robots out there, I guess, doing important stuff for us in space. It's too expensive to send people. We have to feed them. So let me wade right into the first question. I'm going to ask Joe to answer the first question, and then we're going to put the poll up, get your views, and then we'll, again, see where everybody else sits. So, Joe, the first big question we have tonight, what is the single most significant thing McGill can do in the next 10 years to contribute meaningfully to the advancement of scientific innovation? And we're going to have a list of choices for the audience because there are an unlimited number of choices, so we've narrowed it down to four. A, focus on recruiting top high school and cégep students. B, invest in attracting distinguished researchers to McGill, like yourself. C, build stronger ties with industry. Or D, focus on building outreach programs that help shape public policy. So which way do you lean on those four?
Well, Andre, this is a lob ball, easy to hit, because it's all of the above. this is really motherhood and apple pie. This is exactly what we should be doing. It goes without saying that we have to emphasize recruiting students and top researchers. But to me, of course, the number four is the closest to my heart because this is what I spend most of my time doing, and this is what we do through our office at McGill, is emphasizing the fact that education at McGill does not end the moment that our students pass through the rotting gates. It continues. The university has recognized that we have a responsibility to the public at large because essentially everything that is done at the university is done for the public, whether it is direct or indirect, that is the case. And we thought that there should be a place where the public should be able to address their questions. And this is why Dr. Trache founded essentially the office and very generously funded it. So the outreach program is very important because people need to realize that science is a part of their life. It is not only for academics working in universities, because we make scientific decisions from morning to night. You wake up in the morning, you decide what kind of coffee you're going to have. Is it going to be filtered? Is it going to be decaffeinated? Is it going to be the Swiss water process? Is it going to be espresso? Those are all scientific decisions. With lunch, if you're going to have a diet drink or a regular drink, are you going to worry about the aspartame that's in there? Are you going to cook in aluminum or copper? People have heard stories about, you know, cooking in aluminum is dangerous because of Alzheimer's disease. And, I mean, I've been cooking in aluminum all my life. I don't remember any problems.
There you go.
So, you know, we try to clarify these kind of things. I feel that the connection of the university to the public at large is an extremely important one because education goes way beyond just getting the degree. Life is an education process, and we don't really graduate until the very end. So we try to help with all of that.
And then when we finally graduate from life, there's the science of decomposition, right?
There certainly is. And, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because the question of just what happens as we decompose to that carbon dioxide, right? We're contributing to the greenhouse effect, the global warming, as we're decomposing. Yeah. But luckily, there are others who are born who are going to replace us, and when they do, they'll start consuming food, which, of course, is grown through the process of photosynthesis. So it's all a nice one big circle of life, as, you know, Disney would have put it, and we're all part of that. McGill is part of the circle of life of the community. So I would vote for number four.
So we have a strong vote for outreach, for community engagement. So let's have you guys vote. So grab your little clickers, and you can press A, B, C, or D, and we'll see how you do, and then we'll engage the other panelists. So, do. Usually when I go to conferences and they have clickers, they have music. Well, Joe, you've already had a massive influence. So number four is got a slight lead, but pretty evenly distributed. So very political answer to say all of the above. You've offended no one in the room. There you go. So let's go to Taryn. Taryn, where do you fit in? Do you agree with the audience here? They go for number four and second, attracting distinguished researchers like Joe. What do you think?
So this is a topic that's quite close to my heart because I spent about 8 years doing a startup company, somewhere between being students and now being at the Canadian Space Agency. I think we're already doing number one. We're recruiting the best students. But the theories are all fine and good. In practice, innovation is a struggle. And I have an anecdote to tell you about my days at McGill when I thought I had what I thought was a pretty good idea in my last year of university and was looking for the resources at McGill or any kind of support to bring that to fruition. And I was told, you should probably visit the management building. And after coming out of the management building, I was told, thinking in my mind, business plan. What's a business plan? I don't know how to write a business plan, so I went back to partial differential equations, and I felt much more comfortable. It's not so evident how to get your ideas funded, the business savvy, get that moving. And to be honest, I closed the book on innovation at that time. Currently, I'm well connected with McGill and collaborating on innovation. There's professors like Peter Radzyszewski at McGill Engineering, who's creating wheels for lunar exploration at the moment. So I would say that we're doing a pretty good job, I believe, on collaboration at the research level. But this 8 years in between, when I did my startup company, from the first business plan that I wrote to the day we sold it, there was no resources at McGill that I tapped into, absolutely no institute, no conferences, no events that I used for supporting that innovation. So in practice, I think McGill could do a lot more. I think McGill is well positioned for being for fostering creative thinking. It takes a lot of creative thinking to innovate. And to have access to all those disciplines that it takes to solve those problems, to innovate, I think McGill really can do a lot more than it's currently doing.
So it sounds like you'd maybe add a fifth one there, more interdepartmental collaboration or something. Maybe the business students could help out the engineering students, and the engineering students could teach them a little science over in business, vice versa.
Absolutely.
And do you think you would have tapped into that? You would have had
your career... I was looking for it.
What would your career path have been different?
I don't think so, no.
Because you did it by hook or by crook anyhow.
Absolutely, and I didn't necessarily think that it was McGill's role until I saw this, I see this question, and I think, well, maybe it is McGill's role. Maybe McGill could do a heck of a lot more. Certainly, I was out there looking, even in those 8 years of innovation, was looking for anything available in the area. And didn't tap into McGill and tapped into various other sources.
Okay. So, John, where did you cast your vote? Even though we didn't give you a clicker.
Yeah. Well, I would actually click with number five with Tarrant. I'm an environmental science student, and so in the School of the Environment, a lot of the core classes are taught by three professors, each from a totally different department. And they'll come in and interject, add an economic point of view to an ecology question. And that was the real reason that I was attracted to the program, was that it offered this holistic, interdisciplinary education. I talked to a lot of my professors, and I'm really interested in science, and I'm interested in science as a way to tackle, the really big problems that I think my generation and coming generations are facing. Climate change, how to feed the world. We're going to have to produce more food in the next 50 years than we've produced in the past 10,000 years of civilization combined. There's some big things coming down the proverbial pipeline. And my science professors tell me, Alex, if you're interested in this, don't go into pure fundamental research. I study ocean acidification, and we know that the oceans are more acidic now than they were 20, 30 years ago. What we need is scientists that can write. We need science communicators, people like Dr. Joe. We need people who can, take what we know and start transforming it into, policy changes, really. And I think that comes in large part from what Taryn was saying, an interdisciplinary education. I think we need, some of the best running backs practice ballet. Some of the best philosophers and writers and poets study higher mathematics. I think we need, in order to create these types of innovative breakthroughs that we need to tackle the really big problems, I think we need innovative and, potentially risky thinking that, you're not going to get from following a totally straight line.
But Joe, we hear about, we're hearing the need for innovation, but I hear from people in science who are a bit squeamish about that. Oh, we don't want business people telling us what to do. Is that a problem?
I've never found that a problem. I've always found at McGill that the collaboration is excellent. Whenever you approach anyone in other departments, they're very, very forthcoming. If anyone kind of suggest the contrary, I think it's because they haven't really tried. So personally, I've never had any problem. We've had great collaboration, and certainly we've organized events together with management people because we do have many common ideas. A couple of years ago, we had a whole seminar on weight control, and that, of course, has huge financial implications. So, we were involved in the science side, they contributed on their side. The fact that this is a multi-billion dollar industry in North America, much of it not science-based. So we worked together to, present a realistic picture. So I've always found collaboration to be excellent.
Great. So before I move on to the next one, I want to ask you one other follow-up question, John. Because we gave short shrift to attracting the best students. So we know you're a great student. You came from the U.S. What attracted you to McGill? How can we get more students like you here?
Oh, well, I don't know if you want more students like me, but the reason I came here was that it was different. You know, I looked at, I'm from Ithaca, so, you know, it's the home of Cornell University, and I looked at people that had graduated from Ithaca High School and gone on to Cornell, and to me it seemed, in large part, like an extension of high school. You know, it didn't offer anything that different, and to me McGill was big and bold and, you know, courageous, and it was in a lively cosmopolitan city, and the price was right, and, you know, it just made sense for me.
Great. We'll get to the price is right in question three. But I'm glad to hear that Cornell is like a high school and McGill is like a university.
Well, absolutely.
I think that'll be the lead of my story tomorrow. So let's move on to question number two, so we have time to tackle all three of them. And I'm going to start with you, Taryn, for number two. What should Canadian society do to bolster the science talent pipeline and ensure that we continue to produce leaders in science and innovation? And again, we've given the audience four choices. Reduce the time it takes to obtain an advanced degree in science and engineering. B, provide more financial incentives, more scholarships, et cetera. C, provide more meaningful and more obvious career paths to students. And D, get started in elementary and high school with more proactive reaching out to teens and preteens to get them excited about science. So give us your pick, and don't take the Weasley all of the above, like some people.
But I love the all of the above. It works so well here. Well, of course, we need to tackle this right from the beginning at every level, and in a way, those answers put us at, you know, the high school level and college level and all the way up. I myself was one of those individuals who said, I'm not going in engineering. Engineering's for boys. So I came to McGill to study astronomy. But I made myself my way out of Rutherford Building and slowly migrated down to McConnell and McDonald Engineering Buildings because I think that was the natural fit for me, honestly, in the end. But I didn't have that kind of access. I had no experience learning as I was growing up. I didn't have any kind of career insight. And I don't think it's so much personally about where you're doing it. It's the frequency of making sure that that message is getting out. The imagery that's getting into the heads of young children. A short anecdote, I was at an iron ring ceremony very recently, giving an iron ring to another engineer. And I sat in the audience, and they come up onto stage one at a time with their mentor. And I noticed that the girls that were coming up for their ring were accompanied by very familiar men who were putting their arm around their shoulder, and I was thinking, that's dad. And I was thinking, good for them, because that girl was growing up saying, I can do it. There's no question there. Obviously, that was always being driven home at home. So thank you for all the dads who've always been supportive of their families. So not trying to say all of the above, but the frequency of repeating it and putting the imagery in their heads right from a young age.
Well, I heard D in your answer, so I'm going to put a D down for you. So let's see what the audience votes on this one. So get your clickers again and see what your answers are. You can feel the tension building. Wow. So once again, our panelist was very influential. You did better than Joe. So almost 60% of the audience sided with you.
But can I add that something, Andre? Is I don't think it's the responsibility of the high schools, per se.
Yeah.
I really think this is the responsibility of everybody who's in this room. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, great. So, John, why don't you... you're the youngest one on the panel here, aside from me. How did you get engaged in science? Was it made easy for you to get excited about science, or were you dismissed as a nerd? How did it work out?
I hadn't been interested in science from the beginning, to be completely honest. You know, I was interested more in the questions, and then science became a way to answer them. But I do think that it starts at a very young age. This question for me strikes me as a bit weird, and it might just be the language, but for me the idea of a pipeline, I think, is almost the wrong question to be asking.
We're a little obsessed with pipelines again.
Yeah, I got that. Yeah. But to me, a pipeline is very linear and closed, and you know, it offers very little room for expansion or collaboration and all the things that we were just talking about. And so the reason that I got involved in science was because, and especially, you know, the School of the Environment, was because it offered, you know, the opportunity to take a philosophy class, to, you know, do a lot of these different things while still focusing on science. And so I actually think that offering the opportunity for science kids to engage in things other than, you know, their primary focus would attract a lot more minds and a lot more of the type of minds that are able to, you know, synthesize large amounts of information and build really creative solutions.
Now, we're trying to get a sense tonight of what can McGill do about this. So I'm interested, you grew up in Cornell's hometown.
Yeah.
Were there people from Cornell going to your elementary and high school and trying to excite you about science? Was that happening?
I had some really good high school science teachers. There weren't people from Cornell coming in. One thing I think McGill does really well is, you know, extracurricular opportunities. I think the Sustainability Projects Fund is a really interesting way to get kids involved in, you know, applied student research. You can, you know, do your honors thesis, you know, on something that has a real effect in the community. And that's been a large part of what I've done is trying to shut me off. You know, science education for younger kids and, you know, trying to teach kids about sustainability through video and, you know, technology and things that, you know, methods and tools that they might not normally be exposed to in order to kind of explore these larger questions. But I think McGill does a pretty good job with applied student research and, you know, the Office of Sustainability, the McGill Writing Center, and I think those are the areas that we should really focus and place an emphasis on for science kids especially.
Now, Dr. Joe, I can pretty well guess where you voted, if you had
a clicker. I won't weasel on this one.
But, okay, but I want to ask you, we have you, you're a national treasure. How can we create more Dr. Joes?
I'm not sure a national treasure. I think that there are a lot of who I like to call quacks who would disagree with that.
We didn't give them a clicker tonight.
Yeah. you know, curiosity is to science what a spark is to a flame. And if you can get kids interested at a very early age on methods of discovery, on the wonders of science, you've captured them for the rest of their life. And I don't say that solely to, you know, with an aim of guiding them towards a scientific career. Everyone is a scientist. Whether or not you become a professional scientist, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you're always making scientific decisions. And if you get it, instilled in you early on in life that critical thinking is critical. And if you get instilled into you how scientists know what they know, why we go to the peer-reviewed literature instead of the National Enquirer, then you've put them on the right path. You know, whether or not they ever end up practicing science or engineering, they will be all the better for it. And it's easy to do in the early days, you know, and we do this a lot. We go out to elementary schools and high schools and do various programs and do demonstrations, and you just see the kids' eyes light up. But what we're always, you know, very careful to do is to make a connection. I think there are a lot of people who go out to schools and do the gee whiz type of stuff. They'll do the bangs and, you know, color changes, and it looks all magical, which in a sense it is. But I think the real emphasis should be to tie it in, to show why it is that we're doing all of these things. And I've had, you know, very, very satisfying experiences with students. And although, you know, it kind of ages me to say this, but, you know, I've had a number of students here who now I've taught in medical school who remembered me from going into their schools when they were in kindergarten. One of them actually was my daughter, and she remembers that when she was in kindergarten, I set off the school fire alarm, which is true, because we did a little explosion. And she doesn't exactly remember what I said or what I did, but she remembers that. But on the other, but there also have been a number of other students who tell me that they. One of the stories that, you know, I always told was the discovery of nylon, because it's such a fascinating story. And I've had, you know, fourth-year students here tell me that they remember that. So, you know, these things are very satisfying, but also practical, because you know, I've also had people tell me that they remembered, you know, how we discussed what happens when the dog gets sprayed with a skunk, what to do about that. And they remember this, you know, 15, 20 years later, even though it was discussed in elementary school.
Tomato juice.
It isn't tomato juice.
Yeah,
I guess you all want to know what it is. It's hydrogen peroxide, which is the real key, and you've got to put a spoonful of dishwashing detergent in there as well. That will do it.
I thought that was to dye their hair.
Tomato juice would just get you a pink dog.
Okay.
So I'm very much in favor of the answer number four there, and I would be very critical of answer number one, which suggested to shorten educational careers, because there's so much knowledge out there to be gained. You know, there's 6,500 peer-reviewed scientific journals spewing their stuff at us. That calculates to about 4 papers every minute of every single day. So we should be increasing education, not trying to push it into fewer years.
Yeah, I don't recall that one having a lot of enthusiasm for it. But Taryn, very quickly before I move to number three, was science fun for you, or did you become a scientist despite how we teach it in school?
Oh, science has been fun for me since I was a child, because when Dr. Joe says the word curiosity, all I can see is a rover rolling around on Mars. And I mean, since a young age, I've been attracted by the simplest things. I want to understand a rainbow, or I want to understand thunder and lightning, and they're so simple, and you're absolutely right. It's every day that we encounter them. We're all scientists, and we have to just keep reminding the children that careers in science are equally exciting.
So let's go to number three. Time's going fast. What do you think should be done to help public universities cope with the increasing cost of providing high-quality science and engineering education? A, we have designate more public funding to research universities. B, allow universities to increase tuition fees. Well, no protesters with red squares, we're safe. Okay. C, introduce tax incentives that encourage greater philanthropic support. And D, nothing. That's a journalistic one, answer number D. So let's start with John on this one. Where do you vote? I bet the student won't vote increased tuition, but
yes. No, I'm slightly opposed to number two, believe it or not. I would actually go with number one. I think that research universities, and especially in Quebec, deserve more funding. You know, as public institutions, they provide a social benefit to, you know, society at large, and I think that that deserves a lot more, you know, public support. I was pleased to learn recently from an email from our principal that McGill is 18th in the world, and yet we have the 67th biggest endowment. So I think if there's one thing that's obvious, it's that, you know, McGill is doing pretty well for the amount of funding that it gets. But, you know, that said, I think both number one and number three are areas that we should focus on. Philanthropic support is really what makes up the difference between, you know, the size of our endowment and, you know, the types of programs that we can offer to our students. And I think, you know, the people here and the events like this in the past are a real testament to that. I would cast my vote with number one there.
But you've got the premier sitting in front of you. What would you tell her? What, give her your 30-second pitch for why she should give more money to science education.
I think that more money should stay with the universities. I think that there's kind of a leak off campus of the tuition dollars. Students from Canada, but not from Quebec, pay into the scholarships that Quebec students receive, and yet they're ineligible for those scholarships. And I think, you know, I'm not completely read up on the tax codes and all that, but I think that there is a leak off campus of money that students pay in, and I think that the premier has a duty to address that, and if the university is able to raise money for themselves, they should be able to keep and use that money as they see fit, especially in a university like McGill, where we are seeing results, we are seeing innovation and top quality students and researchers being produced.
Okay. So let's see what the audience votes on this one. So again, one last time, get your clickers out, and we'll see what you think we should do. Okay, so we have A and B, designate more public funding and allow universities to increase tuition fees, and Nothing is very unpopular. That's good. That's good in a university setting, I would think. So Joe, where do you cast your vote on this one? What should we do about funding?
Number two is my vote. Education is expensive. It's just a question of who pays for it. Yeah, it's fine to say designate more public funding. Well, what is public funding? Public funding is tax money. Tax money is our money. So it's just a question of which pocket it comes out of. I think that our tuition here at McGill is incredibly low. Students are paying hardly more than what I paid when I was a student. This is one of the best bargains in the world, McGill education. And it disturbs me that last year we had this whole commotion about, what was it, a $300 or so dollar increase a year, which is less than a cup of coffee. And my office is right on Sherbrooke Street, and I watched the demonstration, parade up and down there, stopping at Second Cup and the other coffee shops, with no thought of spending $4 on a cup of coffee, but to spend 75 cents a day on education was a no-no. I think it is certainly no student will forego an education because they don't have money. There's always bursaries, there's scholarships, there's loans. That is a bridge that can be crossed. We need more money. The infrastructure is crumbling in many cases, and whether it comes from public funding or from students' tuition, we just need more. And obviously, philanthropy is a big player in this game too, and for sure, we wouldn't be able to have the wonderful Lorne Trottier Public Lecture Series, which we're going to have right in this room next week on Monday and Tuesday at 5:30, to which, of course, you're all invited. Four world-renowned speakers on nutrition so that you can get all of the health benefits. We wouldn't possibly be able to do that if it weren't for philanthropic funding. So, of course, that plays a role, too, but I think we need to do something about the tuition. People will say that if you increase the tuition, students will stay away. The evidence is that is not the case, as we've seen, as our principal has stated. When we look at our increase in management tuition, in fact, it has increased the enrollment. You know that you will think that if you're paying more, it's even worth more, and it is. I mean, McGill is a huge bargain, but it doesn't need to be quite as big a bargain as it is.
Well, we know across Canada the average tuition for undergrads is about $6,000 a year across Canada, and it's still below $2,000 in Quebec. There is a big, big disparity.
There is.
And we know what foreign students pay a little more, about $18,000 on average. So there's a lot of room there for changes. Taryn, where do you ring in on this?
There are two things that Dr. Joe said that I definitely agree with. Philanthropy, I can't express more how important it is. And that, I think, as an individual, our alumni could ask for more. They could do a lot more. We need the differentiator between the other philanthropy that we're considering. That's where I would go in with number three. If it's a tax incentive or if it's because we can follow panels or discussions like tonight or lecture series, that is a differentiator. That is all the more reason why we would want to put our philanthropy towards McGill than perhaps other causes. Another comment that Dr. Joe said was about sometimes increasing tuition, you could feel like you're investing more. I directly graduated from McGill and moved to California, and all of my contemporaries had $120,000 loans that they were paying back for their education. And they had it all set up, that for life, they would do their $8 a month payment, and they were very comfortable with that. Now, again, we are engineers. We plan to work for life. We're not going... Engineers have a certain mindset where we're comfortable with certain responsibilities and many things are black and white, but I adjusted to that way of thinking by being around that sort of attitude, and I have come to agree with it, maybe not to the same extreme. Okay, perhaps in Canada we don't need to be at that extreme, but when I was at McGill 15 years ago, we were going lean. And I see we're still having that conversation, so I believe there's no silver bullet. And I suppose that the one answer, other than, it's not doing nothing. I think McGill's doing a good job of currently the way that it exists. But For number three, we could get draw more funds from our alumni if there was a differentiator.
Okay, good. So somebody's going to hand me cards with some questions from the audience, and we'll wade into those, because I'm looking forward to those. I think those will be some good ones. But while we're waiting for the cards, Joe, I want to ask you something that sort of fits in the second question. And it was, Taryn mentioned, you know, getting more girls into engineering and science, and we've put a lot of effort into that. And I know we've discussed this before, but have we kind of forgotten boys now?
To a degree, yes. You know, we in the 70s, 80s, we ran all of these programs to encourage girls to go into science. Well, we did a very, very good job, because right now our undergrad science is over 60% female. Our medical class is over 60% female. So perhaps we need to encourage young boys to go into science. Yeah, I mean, that program to encourage girls worked extremely well.
And I think that's a good idea, but I'm the father of girls, so maybe hold off a few years. So we have a couple of questions already. Let me just grab one randomly. Should McGill follow the money and establish a campus in Qatar or the UAE, so United Arab Emirates, if my geography serves me right? What do you think of that route of raising money? Maybe, Taryn, you want to tackle that. Is that a way of bringing in more money? Create overseas campuses affiliated to McGill. Many universities.
I like that. I was doing some reading on some of the Globe and Mail series and talking about flipping classrooms and doing things differently. So absolutely, I think that's an excellent notion.
So a good way of raising money and raising profile.
Absolutely.
What about maybe John? You want to tackle this? What about online? Would you do a university degree online? That Ontario, for example, is going that route. It's a bit flu, as we say in French, how they're going to do it. But what do you think of that? Or is the community, the being there, important?
I think that's it's a really interesting question, especially given, you know, the Coursera and a lot of these, you know, free online universities that have been popping up. And I do think that is a trend that we're going to start to see a lot more of. But I think it's also really good to be cognizant of the fact that you lose something, especially in the arts, when you're not directly present in the classroom with a professor. And, you know, a lot of my science courses are recorded, and it's really nice. You know, if I wake up late and I miss the course, to be able to go back afterwards and listen to the lecture. But I fear that, you know, moving completely online will start to marginalize a lot of the arts courses.
What do you think about that, Joe, about not just online courses, but the technology in the classroom? Do we have enough of it? Do we have too much of it? Do kids not pay attention because they're on their phones when you're talking to them now?
We are on the technology treadmill, and you can't get off of it. Technology is going to keep evolving, and we have to make use of it. And here at McGill, we've really been at the forefront of that. I mean, we were recording lectures here as early as 12 years ago. My colleague David Harp had a huge role to play in this when we established a system called COOL for courses online. And to be frank, at first, you know, I wasn't all that happy because we did see a decrease in attendance in classes. But the fact is that grades went up because students look at it and they look at it again and again and again until they get it. So if the bottom line is, what kind of job are we doing educating? We have to put our egos aside. And, you know, we have 600 students registered in our course, something like that, and I don't like to look out and see only 400 there. But the fact is that all 600 are performing better on the exam than a similar 600 did 10 years ago when we weren't recording. And as far as the online courses go for outside of your local community, this is the way things are going. Harvard is doing it, Dartmouth is doing it, so we somehow will have to get into this. But these are not mutually exclusive things. It's not either the classroom or that. It has to be both.
Okay. Now, I think, Taryn, this one was written for you, so I'm going to throw it your way. One of the growing problems is that universities tend to be conservative institutions. How do we get them to be more like Silicon Valley and think outside the box? So how do we bring that private entrepreneurship mentality to the university, or should we?
Or should we? I mean, that is a question I've been asking myself. But we certainly do have the disciplines available within the campus. I really do believe that at the undergraduate level, there's a lot of individuals who are innovative and, you know, really interested in collaborating. And I do think it's at that point that and when they're really on the edge of new ideas and they really want to bring those to fruition, I do think that we can engage more of the undergraduate community for this. So I think that perhaps at the undergraduate level is where we should be looking. Okay. To encourage and motivate.
So John, what do you think on that? Do you think we need to be, do you think a university like this one is a little too conservative, it should do things a little differently?
I actually think McGill's doing a pretty good job on that front, you know, at least from the undergraduate perspective. You know, there's a lot of internship opportunities. There's a huge number of labs that hire undergrads to help with research. I think McGill does a particularly good job with that. One thing that I'm, you know, not well read in, because I don't get big research grants yet, hopefully, is you know, the way that we fund. And I think that a lot of the big breakthroughs, you know, come through risky types of research. And I think, you know, often I've talked to professors who say that they're kind of forced into applying for smaller, more manageable, bite-sized research grants, so that they can meet their quota and perform at the level that they say that they will. But I think that, you know, maybe looking towards funding people rather than projects is a good way. I've been reading about an institute that funds a person for 5 years to do whatever type of research it is that they want to do. And if, you know, their research shifts directions, then they're able to reallocate funds to whatever is their new idea that they've found and latched onto. And so I think that's a model that could be looked into, but, you know, there's no easy answer.
Yeah, great. So I think this will probably be our last question, given the time. Someone mentioned earlier the ambivalence of scientists getting... You shouldn't put big words in these questions. I'm a journalist here. So someone mentioned earlier the ambivalence of scientists. Oh, no, so importance. This must be a doctor's writing. Somebody mentioned the importance of scientists getting involved in policy to impact change. What's the best way to do this? So Joe, how can scientists change policy?
By getting involved in politics. We don't have a large number of scientists who are engaged in this. In the United States, I know because I had a chance to speak to a congressional committee down there. There are two chemists, or people who would call themselves chemists. There's one physicist and a couple of physicians in all of Congress. That's not a huge number. We don't have a whole lot more here. And when you are making decisions which are based on science, and so many of them are at the political level, when you're talking about global warming, when you're talking about the pipeline, when you're talking about funding health and drug costs, I mean, these are not totally political decisions. These are enveloped in science. So we need people who are well-trained in science going into politics. But usually they're too smart to do that.
But we have in politics today almost an anti-science bias, an anti-evidence bias. It's much worse than just not having scientists there.
There certainly is an anti-science bias, not only in politics, in general, in the public. And this is one of the things that you know, I've found most disturbing in the last few years is the conspiracy theories that have evolved. And, you know, the beliefs that big corporations are somehow in cahoots with government to undermine our health, that Hydro-Quebec is putting out these meters and the radiation that they produce is going to destroy us without any understanding of the underlying technology. So this is, you know, to get back to this, what I said at the beginning, is people need to have fundamental science so that they can make intelligent decisions on this. And in politics, you need more than fundamental. So we need people going into politics who have strong science degrees. I'm not sure how you go about encouraging that, not being a politician.
Well, I'm going to write the draft Joe petition and pass it around here tonight before we leave. How's that? So before we wrap up, I want to give you each just one quick minute to give us a take-home message. And I thought we have some philanthropists in the audience. Give us very quickly, what's the best bang for the buck they can get? Where should they put their philanthropic money to get better science? So Karen, do you want to start? Taryn, sorry?
Yes, absolutely. I would love to start. So as I said earlier, I really do feel like it's those of us in this audience who are supporting McGill who can really do the most for supporting the STEM areas that we should all be outreaching. I really am a strong believer in experience learning, and I think all of us have the ability to invite others into our circle, bring somebody along for the ride, whether that be for half a day or a day at work or hiring a student for an entire session. I think we all have the ability to spend a little bit more time bringing others along with us. So I would like to urge all of you to reach out and bring some, you know, and perhaps train others and bring them into your fold. I think that supporting McGill University, I think we're all doing that by being present and exploring provocative questions and asking ourselves what we can do or what we maybe can't do as a community. And so I really appreciate the time that everybody has put into coming tonight. And I've been really pleased to be engaged, and I plan to be engaged for the long run here.
Great. So, Joan, you've already convinced our new premier to give more money to McGill. Now convince the philanthropists.
I don't need to explain why you should give to McGill. I think everybody here already knows that. But if you are going to give to McGill, and I hope you will, I plan on giving to McGill once I graduate and hopefully get a job. I would give my money to areas that promote undergraduate research, applied student research, getting undergrads out into the field, taking what they learn and applying it in a hands-on manner. I think, both gets McGill's name out there into the world, takes what's learned in academia and translates it into real-life applicable solutions to problems. It's a two-way street, though, right? Because what students learn out in the field, they're able to bring back to McGill. And I think that, academia is often kind of a closed bubble, and it's really useful to get people exchanging ideas from different communities, different parts of the world, indigenous populations. There's a lot to be learned from areas outside of the robotic gates. And so I would urge you to, donate your money to areas that help undergrads spread McGill.
So Joel will give you the final word before you kick off your political career.
I think the two most important things in life are health and education. I think everyone will agree on that. We do both here at McGill. There's a tremendous amount of health-oriented research. But we also need to communicate all of that research, because unless it's communicated, it kind of stays dormant. I mean, it's one thing to communicate among the scientific community, but my career has been forged on communicating with the outside world. And I think that we need to encourage more of that. Science-based, people need to understand what is going on in the research community. People need to know what we are doing here at McGill. That is certainly one philanthropic venture. And we also need better physical facilities. That's something that isn't talked about that much. You can't teach properly unless you are in a good environment. And the funding from the province here just has not been sufficient in order to maintain this university at the standard that it should be. So I think we need some philanthropic ventures along those lines to improve our facilities, improve our buildings.
So thank you for your thoughtful answers. I want to invite Mark Weinstein's already up here, so my time's up. Please join me in thanking the panelists while we make our way off stage. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andre, Joe, John, and Taryn, for a fascinating look at the future of science and engineering education in Canada. You've given us a lot to think about this evening, and I think I can speak for all of us here when I extend my sincere appreciation to all of you for your insight and wisdom on these critically important issues. Thank you again. It is now my distinct pleasure to call upon McGill's principal and vice chancellor, Professor Heather Monroe Bloom, to come up and say a few words. Éminente épidémiologiste dans le domaine de la psychiatrie, la professeure Monroe Bloom occupe le poste principal de McGill depuis 2003. Elle a porté à ses fonctions un savoir-faire inestimable en matière d'avancement de l'enseignement supérieur, de la science et de l'innovation au Canada et à l'échelle internationale. Gouvernement et organisations sollicitent son opinion quant au rôle des universités et de la recherche dans les accroissements de la concurrence internationale et l'enrichissement des sociétés. Heather currently chairs the Association of Universities and Colleges of Canada's Standing Advisory Committee on University Research, is a member of the Science, Technology and Innovation Council of Canada, the U.S. National Research Council's Committee on Research Universities, and is co-chair of the Private Sector Advisory Committee of the Ontario-Quebec Trade and Cooperation Agreement. Earlier this year, the principal was named as a member of the prestigious President's Council of the New York Academy of Sciences, joining Nobel laureates and other prominent leaders of academia and industry from around the world on this advisory board, whose mission is to promote the resolution of society's global challenges through science-based solutions, to support science literacy, and to advance scientific research and knowledge. As principal of McGill, she works tirelessly to extend the university's global reach and cement its place as one of the world's great public research institutions. At the same time, through her task forces on student life and learning and diversity, excellence and community engagement, two task forces here at McGill, she has strengthened McGill's commitment to providing an outstanding learning environment for its more than 37,000 students while making positive contributions to citizens and communities in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome McGill's principal, Heather Monroe Bloom.
Merci, Mark. Bonsoir, bienvenue, chers collègues, amis, étudiants. And I'd like to very especially recognize with us here this evening Dr. Lorne Trache and Madame Louise Trache. If you just stand and be recognized, please. And as well, Dr. Michael Meehan, the lead co-chair of our McGill campaign. Je voudrais également souhaiter la bienvenue à Professeur Christophe Guy et mon collègue, Directeur Général de l'École Polytechnique. And Professeur Guy, would you please stand and be recognized? And of course, my own very special thanks to our remarkable panel, Andre, Joe, Alex, and Taryn, for a superb presentation, each of you, and for a fascinating exchange. And you gave us both proper positive reinforcement to do the good things that we're trying to do and also encouraged us to reach higher. Après avoir entendu les contributions de nos panélistes et en vous voyant tous réunis ici, je me dis que McGill a une chance extraordinaire. Notre réputation rayonne dans le monde. Il est synonyme de qualité et d'excellence. We've ranked among the top 25 universities in the world for 8 years running in the QS rankings, and McGill sits in the top league of the three major world rankings. Just last week, we were once again ranked as the number one research-intensive university in Canada by Maclean's, the eighth straight year in which we've held that distinction. And in the magazine's reputation survey, McGill has consistently placed number one for highest quality, and this year number one amongst employers. These impressive rankings speak directly to the very people McGill nurtures within its two campuses, and you've seen an extraordinary example of that in our panelists this evening. As other examples, think of the four exemplary undergraduate students who this year won Quebec's Force Avenir Awards, which recognize, honor, and promote the commitment of young people in socially conscious community-building endeavors. Panelist Alex Pritz was a past winner, so we know they're in very good company. Je pense aussi aux chercheurs de McGill qui sont les maîtres d'œuvre de 4 des 10 découvertes retenues en 2011 par le magazine Québec Science. I think also of the 14 recipients of the prestigious National Vanier Graduate Scholarships currently pursuing doctoral studies at McGill this year. and the 9 elite McGill postdoctoral fellows who were awarded Canada's largest number of distinguished Banting fellowships in 2012. I think of our 8 new professor inductees this year into the Royal Society of Canada and the 4 Royal Society new medalists at McGill this year, and as well the many McGill leaders who were honored with the Order of Canada, Ordre National de Québec, and many, many national and international prizes and honors. I could go on, I won't, we don't have time, but the point is clear. McGill is leading the way when it comes to top talent and to research and innovation in fields that are shaping the future of Quebec, of all of Canada, and of the world. And we do so as part of a really remarkable system of universities here in Quebec and across Canada, and in spite of the meaningful constraints that you've heard about this evening. And McGill, through all of this, is working very hard to close a gap that allows us to say, something I hope we'll still be able to do before the end of this academic year, that every qualified student will be able to come to McGill independent of their financial means, a gap we've been closing dramatically with philanthropy, with our own investment, and with the talent of our students to win awards, particularly at the federal level, but that gap remains. Good management, good governance, and dedicated students and colleagues help to build the reputation that McGill enjoys, but philanthropy plays a very special role in leveraging the support that we garner in these other spheres, and you, our loyal donors and friends, help us to move ahead. And I want to just stop. I was urged not to extemporize this evening, but I'm going to just for a second to build on some of the comments of the panelists to say that, of course, publicly purposed universities like McGill depend on sustained, effective levels of investment from provincial and federal governments and on the talents of our colleagues and our students to attract competitively allocated, merit-based awards, financial support from elsewhere. But philanthropy is a very special contributor to the kinds of customized and very publicly focused programs that you see in Joe Schwartz's office, in the supports that allow our students to go abroad and take the reputation not only of McGill, but of Quebec and Canada broadly. So great universities receive funding from all who benefit from those contributions, and yes, I would add students to that list, government and communities, employers, students and their families to the best of their ability, and alumni and friends, and that diversity of sustained funding is absolutely essential to McGill's success, and I know my colleague Christophe Guy would say the same thing for his institution. Philanthropy supports McGill to provide more accessible education, along with our own commitment that every net new dollar of tuition that we realize at McGill will have 30 cents on the dollar go into supporting student aid. It supports us to be an international beacon of excellence for Quebec and Canada, to boost Quebec's performance in the knowledge society and in civil society, and to advance its profile on the world stage. Simply put, it improves the lives and health of Quebecers and all Canadians. And this brings me this evening to a very exciting announcement. For many of you who are familiar with McGill's faculties of science and engineering and our public lectures and our public science outreach office, Dr. Lauren Trache will need no introduction. Lauren is, simply put, one of McGill's most distinguished alumni, and he is one of our most forward-thinking collaborators and benefactors. Gifts made by Lauren and Louise and his family have touched every corner of science and engineering at McGill. They have created new research chairs, new graduate fellowships, and public symposia. And the Lauren M. Trache Building, now home to the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering and the School of Computer Science. As Lauren describes it, his passion for science and discovery began when he was a boy. We heard this from our panelists as well. It motivated him to complete bachelor's and master's degrees at McGill in electrical engineering. And that passion continues unabated. Today, Lauren plays an active and engaged leadership role in guiding McGill's science outreach to the community, as well as in championing McGill's excellence in the fields of science and engineering. Just last year, as you've heard, Lorne endowed programs within McGill's renowned Office of Science and Society, and in honor of this gift, we renamed the office the McGill-Trache Office of Science and Society. Now a Governor Emeritus of McGill, Lorne was awarded an honorary Doctor of Science in 2006. The following year, he was named a member of the Order of Canada. In recognition of his outstanding commitment to advancing knowledge, discovery, and public policy related to science and engineering in Canada. And today, Lorne has extended his already extraordinary commitment even further in his support to his alma mater. I am moved and grateful to be able to announce this evening that thanks to a significant new commitment from Lorne Trache, McGill is creating two new institutes within its faculties of science and engineering. The first, the Trache Institute for Science and Public Policy in the Faculty of Science, and second, the Trache Institute for Sustainability in Engineering and Design. The Trache Institute for Science and Public Policy will provide leadership in advancing science-driven policy while enhancing scientific literacy in the public at large, sorely needed. Through fellowships, undergraduate research awards, and a host of activities, including public fora, publications, and outreach, the Institute will provide a unique nexus for outreach, discussion, training, and advocacy. It aims to make a positive contribution to stimulating scientific dialogue and science policy in Canada and around the world. And the Trache Institute for Sustainability in Engineering and Design will build upon a robust program developed through the support of Lorne and fellow McGill Engineering alumnus Ram Panda. It will serve as an independent, evidence-based think tank. It will better inform and educate decision makers and the broad public about sustainability from a public policy perspective. Its programs, activities, and services will make McGill a national leader in research and teaching in the area of sustainable engineering, and it will extend its influence to other universities and federal, provincial, and national government agencies and departments. L'Institut formera aussi un partenariat nouveau et très important, vital pour nous tous, avec l'École Polytechnique, ce qui assurera à Montréal sa place de moteur de la recherche et de la découverte scientifique dans ce champ disciplinaire crucial. Je suis ravi que mon collègue Christophe Guy, directeur général de l'École Polytechnique de Montréal, et plusieurs de ses collègues pourraient se joindre à nous ce soir. Lorne, on behalf of Dean Martin Grant and Dean Andrew Kirk and myself, and all of our colleagues and students in the faculties of science and engineering, our colleagues at École Polytechnique also, assure you that all will benefit. We will put our shoulders to the wheel. We were saying earlier this evening that with these great announcements, the work begins. We know it does. And we undertake to represent the vision, the values, and the dedicated discipline of these institutes in the contributions that they make. And so I express on behalf of all of us our profound gratitude to you, to Louise, and to the family for this most recent gift. Heartfelt thanks to you for all that you've done and continue to do to advance our mission and our capacity to contribute to society. Thank you, thank you. Your contributions demonstrate that extraordinary things can happen when magnificent alumni, philanthropic investment, and talent and ingenuity at the university come together for the greater good. Now, I know you all want to hear from Lorne, and you will, but before we do, I want to invite someone to the stage who can speak most directly to the power and impact of the Trache family gifts. Kyoko Gutanda is a PhD candidate in our Department of Biology and a two-time recipient of a Trache Accelerator Fellowship to support her research into evolutionary and behavioral ecology in marine environments. Just this year, Kyoko received the prestigious Senior Woman Academic Administrators of Canada's 2012 Graduate Student Award of Merit for outstanding leadership in the university community while maintaining absolutely record-breaking academic status. Kyoko, please join me on stage and share with us what the Trache Fellowships have meant to you and your academic career. Please join me in welcoming Kyoko.
Good evening, friends, benefactors, and distinguished guests. As Heather Monroe-Blum has introduced me, my name is Kyoko Kotanda. I'm a PhD candidate in McGill's Department of Biology and a two-time recipient of the Lauren Trache Science Accelerator Fellowship. I'm proud to be part of the current generation of students at McGill. My route here was a little bit unusual. I'm originally from Southern California and was questioned on my desire to move to Canada by the immigration officer who granted me permanent residency. You're from California? Girl, you're going the wrong direction. Needless to say, I believe I have moved in the right direction, as I am now happy to call Montreal, Quebec, and Canada my home. I originally moved here in 1998 because I was offered a job with the Grand Ballet Canadien de Montréal, one of the top ballet companies in Canada. I do confess when I came here, I was a relatively naive American, though I did know that Toronto was not the capital of Canada. 6 years of dancing with the Grand Ballet Canadien was an ideal opportunity to acclimate to my new home. I learned French, came to appreciate the health system here, and had the opportunity as a dancer to work with amazing choreographers and tour the world. However, ballet dancers have finite careers, and I decided to return to university in 2005 to pursue an undergraduate degree. I did not want to leave Montreal, so I decided to aim high and set my sights on McGill. It was difficult readjusting to academic life. My last class had been in grade 11 in high school, where material was presented on overhead projectors and chalkboards, and laptops in the classroom were unheard of. I was amazed at the new technology at McGill University that greatly enriched my experience as an undergraduate student, much of it due to the generosity of benefactors such as yourselves. During my undergraduate degree, two things happened. I received my scuba certification, and by diving underwater, I discovered just how cool fish were. So my interest in fish helped me gravitate towards independent projects where I was able to conduct my own research projects. By the time I graduated, I realized I wanted to continue pursuing research, and so I decided to continue my education by pursuing a graduate degree. One of the many wonderful things about McGill is the depth of talent and researchers here, and this allowed me to stay at McGill and pursue my graduate career here, as opposed to going to another university. You might be aware, but ballet dancers don't get paid a lot. Neither do university students. Through the generosity of patrons such as Lauren Trache, yourselves, and other generous donors, the financial scholarships and bursaries I have received along the way have enabled me to focus my time and energy on my studies and my research, and for that I'm very grateful. I've discovered a second career beyond ballet that I'm very excited and very passionate about. These grants and fellowships have also allowed me to volunteer for programs like Let's Talk Science, an outreach program aimed at getting elementary to CEGEP level kids excited to learn and do science. I'm sure the benefactors and Mr. Trache would be very happy to hear that, as would the panel. Mr. Trache, because of your vision and generosity and the generous gifts of so many others who have followed your lead, I have not only had the opportunity to pursue a second career that I am inspired and love, but I'm able to share my passion and love of science with so many others. And for that, thank you.
Thank you so much, Kyoko, for those great words and great example. Now, without further ado, our real main event, I invite Dr. Lauren Trache to the stage, along with my colleagues, Deans Martin Grant and Andy Kirk, and as well, Michael Meehan, co-chair of Campaign McGill, for a special presentation. Now, Lauren, you exemplify the passion, dedication, and vision that have characterized McGill's great builders since James McGill's founding gift, established over 191 years, establishing our university over 191 years ago. It therefore gives me the greatest pleasure to present you with this token of our profound appreciation of you and of all that you and your family have done for your alma mater. So here I'm presenting you, through my colleagues, with an exact replica of James McGill's original keys to the Burnside Estate, located where McGill now stands. And let me read aloud the inscription which accompanies this gift. Presented to Lorne Trache on this fifth day of November in the year 2012 with profound gratitude and appreciation. When James McGill founded McGill University in 1821, he bequeathed his Burnside estate to, in quotes, erect and establish a university for the purposes of education and advancement of learning in this province. It is on this footprint that McGill now stands. It is in the very spirit of that founding act of philanthropy that these keys, the exact replica of James McGill's keys to his estate, are presented to you today. You are someone who has opened doors for so many. You've laid the foundations for knowledge, innovation, and scholastic inquiry to grow and flourish. And I'd like to now, with that, we'll take those heavy keys from you. Lorne Trache, friends.
Wow, what an introduction. And those pictures, gee, that was quite a surprise there. I think one of my daughters had something to do with showing pictures of me with our grandson and some of my hobbies like model airplanes and stuff like that. So anyway, I've been asked to say a few words about why I support McGill. Pourquoi est-ce que j'appuie l'Université de McGill avec des dons philanthropiques? Well, let me start by saying that I have felt a debt of gratitude to McGill ever since I began my studies here as an undergraduate in the Faculty of Engineering in the mid-60s. I was fortunate to receive a scholarship that covered most of my tuition. It was this opportunity, coupled with my admiration for the example set by other leaders in the computer industry, such as Bill Hewlett and David Packard, that inspired in me a desire to give back to my alma mater and to society as a whole. I'm also motivated by a strong belief in the importance of science and technology education, as we just heard with this panel today, some great subject. I believe that the foundation of our civilization and the primary force behind the progress of human society is based on science and technology. But I am dismayed also by dangerous science illiteracy that pervades much of our science in important issues such as climate change and the safety of vaccines. I believe that universities such as McGill have a crucial role to play, not only in educating the next generation of scientists and engineers, but as centers of enlightenment for the broader society. I'm proud to support McGill University not only because of the gift, the educational gift that it provided to me, but also because it is internationally recognized as a world-class institution and is Canada's leading university, as you also just heard. McGill attracts many of the brightest minds in Quebec, Canada, and the world to learn, to teach, and to conduct research. I believe it is important to nourish and support this excellence and to help to bring it to an even higher level. Je ressens une profonde satisfaction en regard des dons que j'ai déjà fait à l'Université de McGill pour un nouveau pavillon de technologie de l'information, pour des chaires en génie aérospatial et en astrophysique, ainsi que des bourses pour des étudiants, comme on vient d'entendre une. L'an dernier, j'ai fait un don pour aider McGill à sensibiliser le public aux sciences. Ce don sera financé annuellement le Symposium Trottier, ainsi que le McGill Trottier Office of Science and Society, lequel est géré par le Dr. Joe Schwartz, qu'on a vu ce soir. There are two additional gifts being announced today. The Trottier Institute for Science and Public Policy is an extension of the concept of science outreach that we had last year with the symposium and the society run by Dr. Joe. This institute will provide grants to professors and students who conduct scientific research in areas of science, medicine, and technology that will have an impact on some aspect of public policy. One of the goals is to encourage McGill scientists to conduct more research in areas of public concern and to better explain their work to policymakers and to the public. With the world's growing population and limited resources, sustainability is a key theme for 21st century engineering. My other gift is for the establishment of the Trottier Institute of Sustainable Engineering. This institute will help ensure that the principles of sustainability in engineering are present in all undergraduate programs. An endowed chair and student fellowships will help ensure that McGill will be among the leaders in this vitally important area of research in sustainable engineering. En lien avec ces nouveaux instituts, je veux faire aussi un don à l'École Polytechnique de Montréal pour établir ce même type d'institut, soit a sister institute, lequel sera connu comme l'Institut de l'énergie Trottier. Je suis d'ailleurs heureux de vous mentionner que le directeur général de l'École Polytechnique, M. Christophe Guy, et quelques-uns de ses collègues se trouvent parmi nous ce soir. De par leur objectif commun, ces instituts inciteront les deux grandes universités montréalaises à développer un solide partenariat, les habilitant à faire des contributions importantes dans les domaines de la pratique de l'énergie durable, de l'ingénierie durable et de l'énergie propre. En fait, ces deux instituts agiront comme un think tank, indépendant, objectif, respecté et surtout basé sur la science. Ces instituts veilleront à produire les meilleures évaluations scientifiques, de même que les meilleures pratiques en ingénierie pour portant sur une variété de problèmes potentiels et leurs pistes de solutions dans le domaine de développement durable et de l'énergie propre. Les résultats de ces études seront ensuite présentés au public et aux décideurs politiques lors d'un symposium annuel selon un principe d'alternance entre les deux universités. My hope is that today's gifts will help McGill play a bigger role in helping Quebec and Canada to deal with some of the key science and technology issues now facing us, and in the process to help maintain and enhance its reputation as Canada's leading university. Merci. Thank you very much.
Thank you again so much, Lorne Trottier, for your terrific words, your generosity, your guidance, and for your engagement with us to follow through to make sure your vision is realized. It's our vision as well. And let me just say, as we close this formal part of the program this evening, how delighted I am to have this new collaboration with École Polytechnique, actually a long-standing collaborating institution with us, and to my colleague, Rector Christophe Guy, to congratulate you and celebrate you for the leadership that you're bringing to your institution as well. Merci à vous tous pour nous joindre ce soir pour cet événement mémorable pour McGill et École Polytechnique, mais aussi pour nous tous parce que l'enseignement supérieur et le rôle des institutions intenses de recherche avec un commitment à nos étudiants en même temps est vraiment l'avenir de notre nation. Thank you all. This is just a wonderful evening. We're so happy that you joined us. Thank you again to our wonderful panelists, to our great colleagues and students. And this kind of evening really reflects the very best of the public purposes of our great institutions. Merci. Bonne soirée.